All right. Good morning and welcome to a live burning platform this morning on the podcast party. I'm, as always, joined by the brilliant and irrepressible Phumi Mashego, who is in the studio in Johannesburg. We have a big guest this morning. I'm really, really sorry I can't be there. If I knew this was going to happen, I would have moved mountains. But we're going to be joined in a little while by Mini Star.
Gutima is in the parking lot. Literally, like, on his way here. We should have organized the scale. Apparently, he weighs himself on Wednesdays. Yeah. We should have organized the scale and gotten, like, weigh-in.
He's the most talked about minister in the cabinet, bar none. He is the guy who has already hit the road running in literal and figurative ways with his ministry. And I can't think of anyone in government that I would rather talk to at the moment, because he's also got personality and a character that's something to behold. So I think we're going to have a fun time this morning.
He may not have brought a scale, but he will certainly be weighing in on a whole host of issues with us this morning. It's going to be fun.
No, but definitely. So
while he walks in here, Gareth, you are the one person in the whole world whose opinion I would like to hear about these poor, poor astronauts who are stuck at the space station, maybe till...
I don't know. I mean, for me, it's my worst nightmare, right? This is like hell. And you know why? It's because Boeing, which used to be a very innovative, very brilliant engineering company that built like the world's best planes, and they went into space and started making capsules for space and all the rest of it. But they've become so statist. Their biggest customer and their biggest influence is government, and they work so much for government now that they're run by the same rules as a government. And they've just fallen through their own backsides. I mean, no one trusts Boeing for aircraft anymore. And no one trusts Boeing for spacecraft anymore, because they're just a big joke, right?
Dude, there was a NASA press conference 2 days ago. And I was watching this press conference and horrified, absolutely horrified, as this guy was like, yeah, you know, space exploration, it's always unpredictable and crazy. So this is what it is. We've just asked them to send back the spacecraft unmanned, and they must just stay there, and maybe we'll bring them back in February 2025.
You know, tell you what, I'm glad you asked about this, because there's something else I did. I did a little calculation. So for every one sunrise and sunset we see, they see 60 in the same amount of time, right? Oh. Because they're spinning around the Earth. So just do yourself a little favor. So they said they're going to be up there for an additional how many days?
So how many days? Listen, a couple of months, because they're saying maybe they will bring them back in February.
Right. Okay. So let's be...
So 6 months. So another 6 months.
So, okay, 6 months times by, call it 28 days a month. Let's be conservative, 168 multiplied by 16. They're going to be up there for 2,688 sunrises. Now, I don't think that's cool. And you know what? Because a company has gone, and believe me, I'm not making this up about Boeing. If you want to, there was a recording released this week from inside of Boeing by a person who was recording meetings secretly, which I always think is a little scurrilous. But still, they said their focus is on diversity and equity and inclusion, and landing the first woman on the moon and landing the first person of color on the moon. So you can tell their priorities are completely out of kilter. This is what they care about. So it's no wonder their capsules don't work. It's no wonder their planes don't work. This is what they're focused on. This is no longer a serious company. Because you know what, Pumi? In space, like in the movie Alien, no one can hear your screams. In space, no one cares about your gender or race.
Nobody has cared about these. Like, this, so many wild things have happened in 2024, but this one, I think we can definitely say, is the wildest part of 2024. But here we are. Welcome.
Okay, here he is, the minister the Minister of Sport, Art and Culture, none other than the great Gayton McKenzie. Listen, Minister, I got to tell you. No, no, wait. Yeah. Let me give him a nice intro here. He deserves it. This man's worked fucking hard for me. So I'm sorry for that terrible language. You're a minister. I should be more respectful. Minister Gayton
McKenzie. That's my language.
Minister Gayton McKenzie is no doubt the most talked about minister in our cabinet already. And he's only been in office for a couple of weeks, months. He's already done a whole lot to himself and to the ministry, which people thought was probably impossible. I mean, who knows how many sports ministers you've had up to now who haven't done very much at all. And already he's hit the ground running, literally, figuratively, and everything else. He comes under a lot of attention, scrutiny, and criticism, but I don't think he cares because his heart's in the right place. Certainly that's from my point of view. He's also the minister with the most personality. I'm thrilled that of anybody in government, we get to spend a bit of time with him this morning, the first minister on the show in a long time, Minister Gayton McKenzie of Sport, Arts and Culture. Ta-da!
I thought you were going to do it like a boxing intro.
How good. Do it for us, Bumi.
Well, so welcome, you guys, Niyadina, because why didn't anyone send me the memo about like the green and gold today?
Well, I have to wear green and gold. Let me tell you, because we got two medals this morning.
I saw that. Oh, man. What? Bayanda Walaza is absolutely killing it. He's in his, like, definitely in his gold phase, because he has been
so humble.
Amazing over the past couple of days. So we got two, and then we still have that 1500 meter race coming up.
Yes, and Bradley Nkwana won the bronze in the same race.
He was part of the 4x. Gareth, I know this is your favorite thing, talking sports. He was part of the 4x100 meter. So the two who were in our 4x100 meter who brought us back silver from Paris have brought us back a gold and a bronze from Peru.
Yes.
Wow.
No, you know, Minister, it's not hard to get involved in sport. And we know South Africans love sport. And I know it's only a part of your ministry, but you've really jumped into this. Are you having fun?
No, Gareth, let me tell you. I always tell people I've been passionate about sport my whole life. I love sport. And I'm so chuffed this morning because a week ago, this team didn't have money to go to Peru. I was on the call, calling for help. My department, I think the bill was 4 million. My department then gave 1.5. Super Sport gave, other people also said, let's help the boys to get there and look at the result. And that's what I'm saying, sport for me, I'm having fun. I love it here. And we are the greatest sporting nation, and we haven't lived up to our full potential on the field. We just need to do that on the field.
Okay, I have two questions, but I'm going to start with this one. You are in a portfolio you didn't go into. You didn't go into this race looking to be in this portfolio. You are very well documented as the various places that you were interested in, and you find yourself in this portfolio, which is not only sports, it's also culture, arts and heritage. So it encompasses quite a big and very wide variety of things. Now that you are in this portfolio, have you had a chance to sit down and put your feet under the desk and think through what the next 4.5 years is going to look like for you in this portfolio and what kind of difference you think you can make?
No, definitely. At the beginning, your question was, this wasn't really what I wanted. I got this and, I love it here. I would not want to be anywhere else. If I truly get an opportunity tomorrow to move to another department, I will respectfully ask, can I please stay here? Because of the potential. Social cohesion, people underestimate the power of why we need social cohesion, why we need to be a socially cohesive country. Mm-hmm. People underestimate that the creative sector is actually a golden economy. And for me, I've sat down, I've read, I've looked at everything. Where I would like to take the department, I think if you look at the four top things that I said to myself, I want to achieve. Number one, you know, we are launching very soon Project 300, which basically is going to take, instead of taking 135 athletes to the Olympics, in 2028, we would like to take 300. Because it can't be that we are 60 million country, a country of 60 million people. And you have the Denmarks of that, and then Azerbaijan's, the other countries was 5 million people taking 150 athletes. So there's talent in this country. So that's the first one, to take more athletes to LA. And the second one is also in sport, is to make sure that, you know, we get back to our winning ways. Everybody looks at us and say, we're not winning, but you can't win on the field if the admin and the guys running sport off the field is not doing the right thing. You know, once you are doing the right thing off the field, it's only then when you can win on the field. Because, I mean, you look at rugby. Rassie Rasmussen, them are doing the right thing off the field. Mark Alexander, Rian, them are doing the right thing off the field. And that's why you see the right things happen on the field. And as far as art's concerned, you know, it's an indictment on all of us that creatives and artists are not recognized as workers in this country. We pride ourselves in having the best constitution in the world. But we are not recognizing them. While everywhere around us, people are being recognized, creators are being recognized as workers. They can't open, they can't buy a house like we buy houses. They can't buy cars like we buy cars. They can't do that. And for me, that's just an indictment and injustice, which I want to fix during my term. And lastly, and most importantly, you know, you can do everything right, but if we as South Africans don't get this one thing right, then we failed. That we are one nation, we are the children of Nelson Mandela. We have a few that wants to divide us. We shouldn't allow it. I mean, and we need to be strong in that. We need to be strong and come out and say, we have moved on. We had a bad past as a country. We've moved on. We're here now. We took a decision. We're going to live together. We can't still be entertaining nonsensical debates like, do you want the STEM to be part of... That was the first question I got in Parliament. where the EFF stupidly asked me, do you believe the STEM must be part of South Africa anthem? Because when you raise the flag, you sing the national anthem. I just said, listen, you know, for me, this I'm so glad the STEM is in there, in the national anthem, because it speaks to where we were and where we are now. It speaks to what we've achieved as a country. You know, it makes everybody feel part of it. We are one nation. We shouldn't listen to racists. We shouldn't listen to people that want to hold us back. And that is the proudest thing for me in this department. And even when you have name changes, which also falls under me, it shouldn't be done in a vengeful manner, like revenge. Yeah, we're going to show them and whatever. It's a needed process for healing. It's a process, but must also be a process that everybody feels we had a say in. So basically that's that.
Sorry.
Minister, I noticed here that there are already compliments coming in for you. I do want to give you some of these because I think it's relevant to how people are feeling. I'm just so pleased you brought up things like national cohesion and the fact that we must look after our culture. We must be proud of our history, as tough as it's been for so many people for such a long time, because it almost reminds me of, and you know, I've read your book where you wrote about your own personal journey. And when people ignore what they've been through and they try to push it under the rug and sweep it away and pretend it didn't happen, they don't ever overcome the trauma, you know. And you had a tough time. I mean, you didn't have the easiest life, and you got into trouble, you went to jail, all of that stuff. And only by facing up to those things do you deal with them and do you get better. And that's true for the country too. And having things like maybe the, you know, the STEM as part of the anthem reminds us of how far we've come. I love that. I think that's very beautiful. Just compliment here from Azalea, who's in the Northern Cape, which is the province that gets ignored the most. Azalea Nivenes says, I want to compliment the minister on the work he's done so far. We're literally experiencing the changes on the ground. Northern Cape arts and culture is busy moving for the first time. That's nice.
No, definitely. You know, the Northern Cape doesn't even have a stadium, a world-class stadium to have an event. Now, those are things that I've identified also during my term, that you cannot have a place like the Northern Cape always being overlooked simply because there's no stadium that's world-class, which means now with the African Nations Cup, I told Safa, I said, no, you have to look at Northern Cape. We've got time before the African Women's African Nations Cup is coming to South Africa. Let's look at places like Safa. For me, it's just that South Africa is a great country. And as you say, South Africa gave me a second chance. This country has given me everything I have today. And I just think that we are wonderful people living in a wonderful country. And, you know, somebody asked me yesterday in a plane, says, Minister, I need to ask you something, please. Do you think the GNU is going to last? I said to them, listen, there's this lie out there that it is only the ANC that needs the GNU to last. No, we all need, for selfish political reasons, all of us, the DA, the PA, all of us need the GNU to last. This is our second miracle. This is our second miracle. Our first miracle was 1994. Because what's happening in the GNU is all the ministers are trying to outdo each other. Now, who's the winner? It is the voter. Because if it's like a parent, if all your kids are trying to come number one in class, the parent is smiling. And the voter is the parent in this example. And, you know, I must compliment the president, Cyril Ramaphosa. I have to. You know, and I'm not even doing it begrudgingly. I'm doing it proudly because we have insulted him. In the run-up to the election, we've insulted him. We called him names. We said stories about him. And he has been so generous in understanding that that's politics. And now he's the glue that keeps us all together. It's not always sunshine and roses, as they say. But I always observe him. He will always bring it back to say that, guys, South Africa is looking at us. We have to make this work. And that is just something I wanted to say.
So interesting that you say that for selfish political reasons, you all wanted to work.
Yes.
I'm interested to know, kind of maybe take us into the confidence of the cabinet meetings that you're in and the discussions around the table, and more importantly, walking out of those cabinet meetings where you all agree.
All right, look, the cabinet, I can't tell you because I took an oath that I can't discuss what's being discussed in cabinet, but I'm going to tell you.
Which is outside. Apparently going to impact us as citizens, but we can't know about it. Okay, I understand. Okay, I understand
you,
that.
Honestly, hoodlums and stuff, I can tell you that we... You know, people wouldn't understand. There's a vibe amongst us. I mean, like, I got this funny story I always tell people. Where I was the president, Mr. Nyotso, the president of PAC, sits next to me, and next to me sits Groenewald from the Freedom Front Plus. We had a debate about something. But I knew the PAC is going to agree with me. And all of us, I was debating with Minister Groenewald. And then the PAC guy, the president of the PAC, was just agreeing with Groenewald. And I was like shocked. And in my mind, I'm thinking like, what the hell is happening here? Then when Groenewald left, Minister Groenewald left, I turned to the president of the PAC. I said, what was that all about? And he says, no, you must understand. I'm closer to him than to you because he is the white PAC while I'm the black PAC. So you have that where you the one thing I can tell you what the ANC has been very bad at previously. And we told them there's a lot of good things they did in government which they never shared. If you get what I'm saying, we find stuff there that sometimes we get praised for. Which they never went out. Like, I'll make you one example. the UNESCO inscription of our heritage sites. That's world. It was everywhere around the world. It was world news. And people are praising me, but I really had little to do with it except signing the last trip for the guys. And I was even reluctant to sign. Let me tell you, that was the first thing I signed. I walk in the office. They come to my office. You know, I'm like 2 hours of minister. They're like saying, "Minister, you have to sign this immediately. The people are at the airport." I said, "Why must I sign? How many people? So many people. Where is he going?" "They're going to India, minister." I said, "What are they going to do?" "No, the inscription." I didn't even know what that means. I'm like, "No, I can't sign this thing." I said, "Where are they going?" "India." So I thought, like, are they not going to the Guptas or something?
Why the reluctance? I'm interested to know why the reluctance, though.
No. Let me tell you what I've learned in government. You don't just sign. I'll make you an example. I got something to sign. And I'm like, "What the hell is happening here? Who's this 17 people going to the Olympics?" And then I asked them, "Are you running? Do you have a horse? Are you swimming? Are you a pole vaulter?" No. I said, stay. And I think we took like four or five of the people. Now, if I had just signed, they would have gone. People, after they got a question, and you know, people are so used to filling in the questions for the ministers and stuff like that. So I then, before I signed for the questions, I then had to go through. The question was, what was the question? Yeah, the question was what, from the EFF, it was your transformation, what you going to do about the lack of blacks at the top? And the answer was like drafted, like you swear Julius Malema drafted the answer himself. But because I read and I read through it, I then changed the whole thing. And I remember my answer. The guys didn't really like my answer, but yeah, that's how I feel and that's how things are going to be. I said, "You can't expect equal outcomes at the top, but it's not equal access. For 30 years in this country, we've asked the wrong question. We ask, why are there no black people in the cricket and the Springbok rugby team?" And everybody asked that question, but nobody asked, why don't we have an Olympic swimmer, black swimmer ever? Yeah. I mean, fair is fair. If you're going to ask one thing, ask about the other one. And listen, I saw how deep is that pool at the Olympics. Yeah, I saw that pool. So I'm like, and now you have to start with a school, at primary school. You understand? We have to expose rural kids also to swimming. If you want to create champions, what people in this country don't want to hear sometimes, it is the uncomfortable truth. The uncomfortable truth is that, you know, we are so obsessed with the outcomes at the top. You know how what we do to people, that black people that are good athletes, that are good rugby players, that reach it through blood, sweat, and tears. And then they're being looked at as, now this is a quota player. That's just bullshit.
It's demeaning.
Yes, I'm saying it's demeaning. And let us give people, there's no black person over the age of 30 years, no black person in South Africa that had pole vaulting at his school. Which school did you go to? But you had a private school.
So I'm just saying.
No, but we.
But that's the point being that statement is a little bit broad. And actually, one of the things that I think we don't do very well, any ministry, is take a look at what people's lives look like. Make a strategic decision about what it is that you want to affect and impact, and then just stick to making that happen. It's so exciting to be going here and going there, and everybody, I mean, we saw your little spat with the comedian, right? And it's so exciting and so confusing and so all over the place because everybody wants a piece of you. Everybody wants your attention. And it's easy to be distracted by those things. And I think that's the one thing that government has done quite poorly over the years, is not having been strategic at deciding where they want to see change and how that impacts the entire value chain, and then work on it. Implementation is one of the worst parts of our government.
But can I just say, I mean, Yeah, there was something that happened this very week with Boxing South Africa. I think you must tell us that story too, because
I'm going to come to that now. But I just want to Bumi must tell me which school she went to that had pole vaulting.
I went to the Deutsche Schule.
That's the top school, probably. Now you see what I'm talking about is that there's this, what you call it, my neighbor called me. She said, I think you're doing a good job, but not a great job. I said, why, ma'am? She says, because you need to get mountain wall climbing at both schools. So I'm like, yes, ma'am, I saw that at the Olympics, I'll make sure that black schools, because I see a lot of the private schools now has a lot of the wall climbing. And she said, and let me tell you something, Aiton. If you're looking for athletes, go find the guy that stole my phone, because he was on that over this wall, and that is your first medalist that you're going to get. Go find him for me. So he's like 82 years old. So I'm like, I'll go find
him. But that's precisely what I mean. Is everybody's got their own interest, right? So everybody pulls in every different direction, and unless there is a very specified identification of these 10 things. If I think about in music and I think about the impact, the outsized impact of South African music, not just Amapiano. And I know that like the Y2K crowd thinks that they've reinvented music for the world. But we come from a very long history, whether it's Black Mambazo, whether it's the jazz, all of South African music has had an outsized influence on the music industry as a whole in the world. So in music, what does that look like? What do we have to focus on in music going forward? In the creative industry, if you think about stage performance, actors and actresses, what does that look like? And make a decision, pick a spot, make a decision. Everybody will come at you with their own thing. We want wall climbing. We want this, we want that. But make a decision on few strategic places and stick to that. I think I stand by the fact that across government, one of the things that we have not seen done very well is implementation. The plans are there. I hear you talk about the golden economy, and I know you read Paul Mashatile's paperwork from all those many years ago about the kind of influence and the kind of money that the Department of Arts and Culture can bring into the GDP of South Africa. When was Paul Mashatile the Minister of Arts and Culture? It was a long time ago, but that document hasn't been implemented.
Right.
Great idea, but who's doing the work?
The fact that I read it must tell you I intend to follow the good parts of it.
What do you
mean? I've read the document you're speaking about. You must understand, if you talk about the GDP, in all the developing countries, or all the countries that's already developed, my portfolio, the sports, arts and culture, contributes around 6% average to their GDP. 6% average. Some even up to 8%. China, the US.
South Korea, France.
South Africa.
All of those countries. It actually belongs. It's not a separate ministry. It actually belongs in the Department of Finance.
Yes. South Africa has got, like, we are standing at around 2.93%. that we contribute towards the GDP. Well, let me explain something to you. You know, in government, you can't ignore some and attend to others. So you got to spread yourself very thin. Let's take the arts. You know, you talk about stages and stuff like that. You look at community halls. They get used like 3% of the time or 5% of the time. And then it's locked up. That's a stage. Those are the things we are busy with now, and same to municipalities. You gotta make sure that children go there every day to practice theater, because that's a theater. But at the moment, you must hire it and all of that. Where do the kids get money to do that? That's number one. Number two, our facilities across this country is in a state of nearly disrepair. The buildings are derelict buildings everywhere you see, the stadiums. Now, what I'm also bringing to the table is the grant funding from my department is no longer going to come out like a vending machine. You know, there's no longer going to be that. I want municipalities, I'm going to ring fence that money, and it's going to come out in stages. When you have to fix that stadium, you'll get your first runs. And when you get your first runs, you will not get the second runs unless you've done the first thing. Because they're right. using the money sometimes to pay salaries, to do other stuff that has nothing to do. That time is over. Mm-hmm. We are meeting with them in the next 2 weeks to tell them that, you know what, we'll rather send that money back to Treasury than for that money to be squandered and used for means that it wasn't meant for.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's not going to be a very popular decision, because I was a mayor, I know this is emergency money. If you can't pay salaries at the end of the month, you're like, bring that funding, that big funding, bring that grant funding here. That's about to stop. No money will go out. Thirdly, is the issue that we spoke about with, you know, South Africa has a rich culture, rich story, and we are rich in music. You know, whether you said it now, people say it, but no music genre in this country has ever impacted the world like amapiano.
Correct. Yeah.
Let me tell you, you can make stiff lips for me. You can roll your eyes. Let me tell you a story about things. I was in Paris the week before the Olympics. I didn't stay for the Olympics, but I was there for meetings the week before. So I've got a Muslim driver, Salim. He's driving me around Paris. So I get to what we call a Kaya house. That's where all the athletes and the parents and everybody convenes, and South Africans are getting there. It's like a home away from home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing those artists performing amapiano. So white kids there performing and other kids performing, and they dancing to all the performances are amapiano. Afterwards, they asked me for a picture. So I assume they're from South Africa. So I'm going like, so how long have you been here? They're like, no, Ang Lee. They don't know English. I'm like, excuse French. Me?
Mm-hmm.
They said, no. I said, no, they're not. They've never been to South Africa. I said, this music? So the one that speaks English says, no, all the kids here in Europe now, we jam to amapiano. So I was so happy. And they said, no, do you like amapiano? I said, yeah, I love it. I'm from the country of amapiano. And... Mm-hmm. When I jumped in the vehicle, so the lady says to me, you must listen to this station, they just play amapiano. So I asked my Muslim driver, Salim, can you please put this radio station? He says to me, you want to listen to amapiano? Yes. For me, it's you know, we've had pata pata, we've had this genres, different genres of music, but the world is impacted by amapiano. It's the future, and we must cultivate it so that it can be listened to even on the moon.
I love that we're doing so well with amapiano, and I think it's a good thing for us to capitalize on that as a nation and make sure people know this is the home of that kind of music, because it is taking over the world. But I do want to quickly go back to sport for one, and believe me, Minister, I'm the guy who knows the least about sport. There are a couple of things, though, that I know. I saw you intervened with Boxing SA, which has been in a bit of turmoil for a long time. There are all kinds of court cases that just drag on and on there. I don't know whether it's helping the sport at all. You can help fill us in on how that's going. And then, of course, a lot of people also saying, well, you know, Drikus did so well. Are we going to bring a fight to South Africa? People are asking about that. And also, who's going to finally take charge of soccer in this country and fix it? Because it's run by people.
Are you going to get rid of that?
Soccer in this country is, everybody loves soccer in South Africa, but it is run so badly, right?
Right.
Are you going to get rid of Danny Jordan?
Let me just answer the first question and I come to Danny Jordan. I think, let me start with boxing. You know, Saturday past, I went to watch a boxing match, a world title fight. And it was one of the best fights I ever watched. And
Boxing SA, sorry, say that again. Boxing match.
Well, yeah, one of the boxing matches mm-hmm. I ever watched. And then I got home, I think 2 hours after I'm at home, I got a message that one of the boys that was fighting has got a head injury. So he's at the hospital. Now, boxers in this country get paid 4,000 rands a fight, mostly. That can't be right. That is just wrong. the previous board of Boxing SA, we are going to open a case next week. I'm going to open a case against them, the police station, for corruption. The things they did, they're running up phone bills, I'm told, of up to 600,000. They just put in the letter 600,000 phone bill. That's nonsense. And we brought in a new board, which has done pretty well in the past 2 months. But that board is being challenged in court. So instead of paying all these millions in legal fees, I then terminated the new board, which is being challenged, because it is my prerogative to lead the process of appointing a new board. That's the first thing I answered. Boxing was a mess. We can't have people getting 4,000 rands, risking death for 4,000. The second issue that you spoke about is the issue of about UFC. UFC, you know, there was this little issue, small little issue in this country where somebody put a mic in Drinkers' face after he won the first world title.
That's why I'm
laughing. And he then said, this government is shit. This government is corrupted. And then there was silence of the lamb when he came into South Africa. Nobody made a fuss from government side. And nobody even on the government websites recognized him. And I then came, when I became the minister, made contact through a friend with Drinkers, and I said, I'm going to visit the gym. He personally told me afterwards that him and his trainers, he's got the most greatest trainer in the world, Mr. Morney. They said, this guy's not going to come because of the stigma surrounding him with the relationship with government. And now in government, if I'm going to come to the Gareth Cliff show, I have to say before, the president must always know where I am. If he looks right for me, he must be able to find me. So there's always an advanced team.
That's how everyone's boss is. Everyone's boss wants to know where you are.
So, but even after hours. So, yes, do you know, I also learned that
ministers, this is not a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, no, that's true. We don't even get off.
It's not a 9-to-5 job. We were told
you don't get off. So I then wrote in the book, I'm going to see Drinkers. Obviously, it leaked out, and people, friends, other in government says, don't go there. That boy insulted the government and all those things. I said, no, he never insulted the government. They never insulted our government. They said, no, we'll send you. And they sent, a lot of people said to me on a WhatsApp group, how he insulted the government. I said, no, he didn't insult this government. He insulted the old government. We are now in the GNU. He has said nothing about the GNU yet. So I rock up at Drinkers' camp.
Bloody yeah.
And it gives me all of this. And then Drinkers, they tell me that, the people of the UFC saw a post from Drinkers. And we made contact with the UFC. We said, no, it can't be that the two champions, Israel and Drinkers, are two Africans fighting on Australian soil. And we then had meetings, email meetings and Teams meetings, and then we had a meeting with them in Australia. And when our team met with them, it was, we are 95% there, where they are bringing a cheer. In fact, Dana White was asked, is South Africa a possibility? Before, he said 100%. We are talking to them every day.
Wow.
You know, I must give the mayor of Cape Town, I must give his props begrudgingly.
Why? He's part of the GNU.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying begrudgingly. So, you know, the moment Drinkers was, Israel was down, firstly, they said to us, they'll bring the fight to South Africa only if Drinkers wins. 10 minutes before the fight, they walked over to the South Africans and they said, even if Drinkers doesn't win, we'll still bring the fight to South Africa. But that wasn't public knowledge then. But when Drinkers was doing that cook sister move on Israel, they don't have cook sisters in Nigeria. So he doesn't understand that move. So there's no cook sisters. They still don't know what happened to them, but yeah, that's another topic. So Drinkers, so when the mayor of Cape Town, I think it was 2 minutes after that, whatever. So he sends a message. He's like, you gotta bring this fight to Cape Town. Now for me, that was so impressive. Eh? That was very, very impressive. As I said, I was like, wow, this guy, this matter is really, really on the ball. And when he said that, so we are looking at the UFC's told us categorically, there's two things they said that's non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, they don't do open roofs.
Okay.
Right. Number two, I told them, no, that's not a problem. They said other countries see this as a problem. I said, that's definitely not a problem for South Africans. It is the time that the match should be staged, should be prime time in the US. Mm. Look, that for them, it's not even a negotiation. So I think it's around 1 a.m. or 2, 3 a.m. here by us. I said, no, we're going to party and listen to Amapiano until until the fight starts. By then, we'll be all sloshed, but we'll have three celebrations because Drikas is definitely going to win. And I just want to say that, you know, his coach for me and Drikas himself, the true champions, they're doing a lot. Mm. Then the main question you asked me about.
Danny.
You know, I don't have the what you call this thing. I don't have the luxury of just making an allegation anymore. I gotta go and investigate what happened, whatever. So I met Mustafa. What they've not admitted to me, but I've picked it up. They broke. I see what's happening. And I said to them, guys, listen, I'm going to give you, as the Minister of Sport, I'm going to give you two deliverables. Two. The first deliverable is that we need to qualify for the African Nations Cup. It's Bafana Bafana. That's the first one. The second deliverable is that you got to qualify for the World Cup. I said to them, this is not even a big ask. We are not a country that should even have this, that as deliverables, if we are honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the richest soccer league in Africa.
Yes. Not be. And then, but you know, people, then you look at our women's soccer team. They're doing well.
With no support.
Well, I wouldn't say with no support because, do you know, one thing I've picked up, which is a happy fact, I didn't believe it and I checked it out, is that we have female soccer millionaires in this country.
Because they play in other countries.
No, but I'm just saying to you that where do they play? Where they're still South Africans. Even if they play on the moon, they're South Africans. I'm talking about South Africans here. So, I'm just saying that if they don't qualify for the two I've just mentioned, then, you know, that we have to crack the whip. You give people deliverables if they don't do it. And you also give them the support to say, we support you till there. And that's where we that's where we have. And then there's this big debate going on. I'm saying the game is going to be shown on Saturday.
The man must just retire. That's all I'm saying. At some point, we have to say.
I know we've only got the minister for a certain amount of time this morning, and we've spent a lot of it on sport, but I do think that one area that South Africa has this richness, and we've spoken about arts with Amapiano and the rest of it, and there's so many other things that we're good at. But culture is like the last part of your portfolio, and our culture needs to be looked after. And I know, Minister, you've already mentioned this. I listened to your first speech that you gave in Parliament in this ministry. I remember you talked about our museums, our heritage sites. You know, as someone who loves history, who probably loves history more than music or than sport, I always feel like this is a thing which people are not taught at school sufficiently. I don't think it should be compulsory, but I think if you don't know where you come from, you have no idea where you're going to. And we have an unbelievable, deep and abiding history in this country. We're the cradle of humankind, for God's sake. And every step that this country has taken, whether it was in the right or wrong direction, we have unbelievable resources all around us. You know, little artifacts that have been discovered in far-flung corners of the Northwest. Places where human beings have created... Limpopo, yeah. Places where people have created... I mean, we talk about Mapungubwe, right? We've got this order of Mapungubwe, but most people don't know what the hell it is. And we've got museums in this country with treasures like unbelievable, valuable treasures that actually belong to the whole of humanity. And I just don't think we care enough in this country about that stuff. You know, if you go to Europe where you were just for the Olympics, and which many of us have seen, America, even China and India, they look after their history. They care about and cultivate their history. There are so many national heritage sites in this country which have just been left to rack and ruin. And it makes me very sad. What are we going to do about those?
You know what you're saying is so true. We've just celebrated, and I agree with you, and I take the criticism. We as government has failed tremendously when it comes to everything you've just mentioned. And I'll make you examples of what is wrong and what, how we're going to fix it. You look at this inscription of the UNESCO sites, heritage sites. It's a massive thing. But South Africans has not really been told really what that means. But with that inscription from UNESCO comes a responsibility that they will visit the sites.
Mm.
Now, when they visit the sites needs to be visitable. If that word even exists, visitable.
Yeah.
It needs to be visitable. And what I've done, I'm now visiting all the sites to go see. You look at you look at the different sites. It's in a state. You know, your heart will break if you can see what this places look like. So next year we have the G20. Now we in a corner because most of the people coming to this country, they want to visit the sites that they read about. Lilliesleaf Farm, I had to visit. I came
it
there.
It almost shut down because it had no money to keep running.
No, it is shut down. We've given them money to fix it, but it's shut down at the moment. Do you know what broke my heart at Lilliesleaf Farm? Was that the people is coming to work, although there's nothing. We went unannounced there, and they had 100% of the... Because that was what for me was... And I listened to the staff. There's no promotions happening. They don't get bonuses, but they come to work every day. And, you know, that's not the government we should be. I'm working on the Lilliesleaf Farm issue. Yesterday, I had a meeting with Robben Island. You know, somebody was telling me in Robben Island, if Robben Island is the most visited museum in this country. But somebody told me something in Paris. And she told me how much she loves Mandela. Just a pity she can't go to Robben Island. I said, why? She's like, I'm seasick. I get seasickness. I'm not going to puke all over the place. And I then realized that we need to make better transport. And I promised her, when you come to South Africa in 3 months, there will be, it will be easier. It will be speedboats. There will be different modes to get to.
You know, Minister, I mean, they've got a landing strip there, which, I mean, the apartheid government last used, you know?
Yes. And yesterday I had a meeting with the waterfront and Minister Patricia DeLille. We met with the management of the waterfront and we said to them, all right, guys, this is what we plan to do. Where do you fit in? Because, you know, it's, they got like 25 million visitors a year at the waterfront. And some of the people there goes to Robben Island. So you have to include them in what you want to do. And we had such a great meeting. We have our next meeting in 3 weeks. But we're going to fix Robben Island. We're going to fix the different places we have. You know, there's a place in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, I think it's called Mabana.
Mm.
And, you know, that was a great facility.
In Mafikeng,
Northwest. Mabana in Northwest. You know, people tell me about that facility. We have to fix those things. And then what irked me the most since I became the minister, and I'm going to be forthright about it, was the fact that I went to go look at how much we got. Sarikans, we're storytellers. We've got so many stories to tell. I then went to go look at the NFVF, National Film Video Foundation. And I found that for 5 years, we have funded them to the tune of 1 billion. 1 billion. We don't have a hit movie. We don't have a hit movie. We don't have a most talked about movie in the world. Tsotsi, I think, was really the one that rocked the world. For the past 5 years, that has not happened. We then went to look further and we found that, you know, you have absolutely, filmmakers are complaining. They're being paid $1.8 million to make a world-class movie. Who can make? You're putting people in a position to fail if you do that. What we then did is we then, so the board, we now went out for a new board, new CEO. But in the meantime, we met with MultiChoice and said, you know, Shaka Ilembe is doing great around the world. Queen Mujaji, the Rain Queen, is doing great around the world. We need to learn from their expertise. We went to Arena Holdings, which has great movies like The Black Prince in production, like the love story of, that nobody talks about, but one of the greatest love stories in South Africa of Women Love Laugh. I see Pumi is now smiling.
Because I know who you're talking about.
Leah and Desmond Tutu. For me, that's the greatest love story. Not for me, but I mean like, I'm not so romantic.
Can I, while you're talking about sites and places to go to, I mean, for me, I just want to make this one request. The Johannesburg City Library.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, I'm interviewing Minister on Wednesday next week. I'm having on my show someone from the Joburg Heritage Council or Heritage Fund. And these guys are like private people who are trying to save.
Yeah.
That library is also a treasure trove. Now, I know you can't do everything, right? And yeah. I don't want you to come here and then never want to come here.
He's willing to spread himself, then he wants to do everything.
No, but let me explain what they do with the Joburg Library, the one in Sandton.
No, not the one in Sandton, the one in the city center.
Oh, the one in the city center.
Johannesburg City Library, not Sandton Library.
Oh, let me tell you, we have a big debate going on now. Let me first, not with the municipalities. We are meeting them next week to discuss the libraries, because some of those libraries fall under them, to discuss that. And I have a big problem at the moment with 1.6 billion being budgeted to build libraries. And I ask myself, so I ask them to bring me how many children do visit and how many people do visit these libraries that we seem to be just building but not maintaining.
Zero.
And I realized that, you know, it's like 6 visitors per day sometimes. That doesn't justify the amount of money that you're spending. I love reading, writing is my passion. And I just came to a point where I'm saying that we need to bring everybody in one room. That works. You bring everybody in one room, and then you don't hear stories. People don't lie so easily. And we want to bring everybody in the book industry together. The National Library Board, because there's a board, the term is expiring now in October. I'm not particularly chuffed with the work they've done. So we got to get people with more knowledge than myself and more knowledge than them. And action. You can have knowledge, but you might not be an action person. We need people that really, really have the knowledge and the action mindset and mentality.
So I think that's, you know, again, I can't expect you to do everything. I don't want you to come and visit us and then never want to come again because we've given you like a list of homework. But, you know, I did see a comment earlier from somebody who said, thank you for pitching up, because first and foremost, what you've been very good at and what other ministers can learn from, you don't have to comment on this, but is that you're accessible. I mean, you are on TV often, you're in the news, you're obviously a very communicative person, which helps. It's part of your character and personality. Some ministers aren't, it's fine. But I love the fact that you talk to us, Minister, because it feels like we have someone listening. And even if you can't do everything, you'll do some of it, right? And I don't expect miracles, considering where we come from. Like, I'd be happy to just see 20% of the action that we've had in the past in this department. It is Heritage Day coming up next month, and I've got to give props to someone in your department who has always been a solid supporter of South Africa and has worked very hard. Our National Herald is a man called Themba Mabaso. And
he's amazing.
He works in Pretoria. He works damn hard. That is an amazing and interesting place where you've got artists. You've got people who are expert in their field. Themba himself is a brilliant illustrator. He's written some children's books. And I want to give people like that credit, because we often talk about the ministers. We talk about the people who we see in the news, but we don't talk about the people who are doing the work. And the ministry houses the department, the Bureau of Heraldry, and they are the ones responsible for all of our symbols, you know, our flag, our coat of arms, the things that we see all the time, but we just take for granted. So I just want to say, while you're in the studio with us, Temba, well done to you. You're doing a fantastic job. You've got great people in your department. And I also want to say, Minister, while we're talking about compliments, you got into, well, you didn't get into, but a lot of people really hate you, hey? Yo, I mean, I saw some noise. When you took this portfolio, who knew that there were so many people who would be touched by the fact that you were given a ministry? I mean, and it's funny, it's the same people, I said so on Twitter, the same people who hate you are the ones who, like, I wouldn't mind if they hated me too, because they're not really the kind of people you want to be friends with anyway. But I saw something different in you too. You handle them with a lot more kind of diplomacy than I think you would in real life. Like, if someone spoke to you like that in real life, I think you would punch them. I know what kind of a guy you are, and I wouldn't blame you. But you're being very, you're being very kind and considerate and well behaved around these people for now.
Let me tell you something. I know you're talking about. As the editor of Daily Maverick, I think they hit me that side, ne? And he called me a prick and whatever. And I was like thinking, thank you, lucky stars, I'm a minister. I have got, you know, you've got this ministerial handbook that tells you how to behave. So I'm already in trouble with it. So I'm skating on thin ice. So I had to breathe in with... I think Fechter is his name. And I'm thinking, like, your little shit, I will slap the hell out of you. You can thank the president for making me a minister. I'll go to your office and just slap you down to the ground and then just face the consequences. But now I've got to be all ministerial, all restrained. You know, there's a I had an incident this weekend with a guy. It's actually funny when I think about it. I went to go watch. I went to Esalen Park in Transnet to go and check the state of it and also to watch my son play soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy was he started insulting the security because they apparently, according to him, they were parking in the road. Mm-hmm. And he didn't even greet them, was very rude to them. So I then went, I said, no, man, just greet people. Don't be like that. And he had the Yorkshire dog, you know, a Yorkie, what they call it, Yorkie, that one of my daughters. And he said to me, you don't know who I am. And I think for a second, I forgot I was a minister. I said, Xavier Moore there. Then I go like, I'm just joking. I said, Moore there. And then I like, I'm just joking. And I diffused the situation. But for me, it's totally out of character to the way I answer people, and I learn and I try to be a better person. And then I saw a lot of comments. You know, one thing, and this is deeply personal now I'm sharing here. One thing that I see a lot of people on Twitter, when I was disappointed, and they say, oh, this guy is so excited to be a minister. Excitement will kill him. He's too excited for the blue lights. He's too excited for security. He's too excited for this. So I just need to put something out here today, which is deeply personal. Yes, I'm excited. Yes, I'm very excited. I'm excited to be a minister. If you had grown up in jail and you become a minister, you'll be excited too. If you had my past and you managed to turn your life around, you'll be excited too. When I look at being a minister, for me, it's not even about... I drive a cheaper car now than I drive normally. I fly economy class, which I never used to do. Because ministers are supposed to fly economy class. With the finance ministry giving us instructions on that. I love serving people. There are people that hate me. But you know what? People don't know about my life, and this is a true story. I can't sometimes, like now, last week I was invited by the lottery to go and present. And I wanted to go and pee. Like, and I realized there's like, 500 people in that room. I knew. By the time I get to the toilet, I would have pissed myself because people would have stopped me, asking me for pictures. People love me. The ones that hate me, it's the right. Well, I also don't. Maybe I hate them too, the ones that hate me. But what I'm trying to say is that I learned one lesson which I want all your listeners to maybe take to heart. You know, when you sit in a cell like I did, and you, I was most of the time in solitary confinement because of bad behavior, and you sit there alone, and you don't smile. You're just miserable. So you're there for 3 months sitting alone, seeing nobody really. And you're just miserable. You don't smile. You occasionally speak to yourself, swearing, like, yeah, bullshit, shit, I'm going to show them what I get out of here. And now when you are free, and people say to me, how long have you been in jail? I say, 10 years. And they go like, everybody, every single person I ever met in my life say the same thing. So long. And here's the bad news. It wasn't long. That 10 years flew. And I'm saying this with a pure heart. Life is short. There's no time to be miserable. When I make jokes, when I'm a minister, when I'm with my friends, they know I'm the guy that makes jokes. I've been a dentist, Gareth, you've been there. I've always a jolly guy. So I'm not jolly just because I'm a minister. I'm just not a miserable person. I nearly said I'm not a miserable son.
I just want to close off with one thing, Pumi, because I think this is very valid. And I think it's such a useful thing for all of us because, you know, I don't like to just lump ministers with jobs. I think we all have a job to do. You've been on your own fitness sort of experience for the last couple of months. You've decided you want to get in shape. You can't have a fat minister of sport. Which
he just wants his jacket to close, man.
Yeah, no.
By the way, I see in the comments that Pixie, who designed that tracksuit you're wearing, is in our comments today. She's one of our listeners. There are lots of big fans of the Ministry of Sport here in this comment section, and there are lots of useful comments. But I think it's so great that you are leading by example there because I like to judge people by their actions, not their words. Lots of ministers talk. But here you are, and you are running, and you are doing fitness exercises, and you're getting to the gym. I think practice what you preach is like something we never see from ministers. So thank you for that too.
You know, there's one uncomfortable lie we tell ourselves. And I tell you where my journey really started. I was invited to go and have lunch with the Springbok legends and the Irish legends. As I get here, so I'm an hour early. So I said to my guys, no, let's go. Let's go. I will sit in the parking lot and do some work. I get to the gate, and the security, my security team says, Minister McKenzie is here. And then the security of the estate where we were at, we're going to have the thing, said, no, picture. So I had to jump out of the car to take pictures with six of them. While I'm taking pictures, I think there's like three Irish guys coming. They're not wearing T-shirts. They're there walking around, coming in the gate, all sweaty and whatever. And people like, Minister, me, Minister, selfie, Minister. So then I walk and this Irish guy says, sorry, we heard you say Minister. You Minister of what? I look at his six-pack and I look at my 36-pack. I said, I'm a minister of the church. I was too embarrassed to say I'm the minister of sport. I said, I'm a church minister. They eventually, when I addressed them, but that moment I lacked the courage of my faith and conviction to own my faith.
I swear it's with your chest.
But South Africans need to hear this, that, you know, obese people.
You're.
That we need to hear this. I was obese, and it's unhealthy. I've lost 12 kilograms since I started, since I said I'm the minister of of church. But we need to be honest with ourselves. You know, it's very a person that's healthy looking, would not, it's politically incorrect to say to an obese person, you're fat. But because I'm a fatty, I want to say to fat people, we got to make a plan. We got to become healthy. We got to live right. And the only reason, Gareth, why I weigh myself every Wednesday is because, let me tell you something, that's my motivation to eat right. You know, I will have a piece of cake there. I'll be like...
I'll be having a chocolate.
And then think about that Wednesday, where I'll put that cake down there. So I just think people should be healthy. And then the reason why I wear this is that, you know, I heard a lot of South Africans saying, oh no, the clothes don't look nice. Listen, I'm a fashionista. This Pixie, this is a very nice top. Look at this. How can you say this is not nice?
It's a lot nicer than the last one.
Oh yeah, yes. No, the last one we're not going to talk about. But now, Pixie, this is nice. You did, like, I love this. Let me tell you. That's why today we're meeting, I think, 200 creatives to listen to them and not them listening to us. Because I want to hear them. I want to hear them in their voice. We're meeting at Birdshoot. And I want to hear them because there's one problem.
What is this Birdshoot tender? Now that we're talking about the Birdshoot, what is this Birdshoot tender? Did you get a memo saying your government meetings must be at the Birdshoot?
I don't get involved with that. I've just been told that. You know, every night before I sleep, Bakang, that manages me, my chief of staff. Every night before
chief
I sleep,
of staff is out here somewhere. Yeah, chief of staff.
Chief of staff.
Not to be outdone, you brought a chief of staff too.
Listen, my chief of staff will give me to say, this is where you go tomorrow. And this is the places you go to. You can't do the schedule in a week because it's like cabinet committee. You're getting called. Like, so Birdshoot, I'm going there now. We're going to hear them because there's one big problem in the arts, in the creative space. And it needs to be said. The biggest problem facing them is that I call it a man, his neighbor's dog, and a fax machine. That's what I call it. Because we have a lot of men, his neighbor, the neighbor's dog and fax machine that writes a constitution. And they represent artists. They represent creatives. And they're getting money.
Mm-hmm.
But you go and you go deeper. There's no website. You go deeper. There's no past work that has been done. But these people, the man, the dog, and the neighbor, and the fax machine, they got a constitution that you swear like has been drafted at Harvard University. Now, that's what we're going to speak about today.
Also, sitting on the desk of the president for the past 4 years already is the artist residual bill. Please, can it get signed?
Yeah,
just asking, can we get the residuals? Get the artist paid. It's been sitting 100%. On his desk. The bill has gone through every single process. It is sitting on his desk. He's busy signing off the NHIs. Can we get the artist paid? That's my last thing. Okay, thank you.
We're out of time. We're out of time. Minister, thank you for coming. I see Vyasin in the comments. Vyasin has renamed you Grayton McKenzie. So there we go.
Nice. They love you in the comments. They love you in the comments. I've changed
in the
my
comments,
mind.
They love me. They love me wherever I walk, wherever I run, and I love them back. And it's just that not everybody's going to love you. I'm not money.
You're not money, because I'm rata kaufela.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you. That is the Burning Platform with Minister Gayton McKenzie, and I'm sure this isn't the last we'll see of him. He's a very busy man, but I appreciate him coming in to see us today. And have an excellent Thursday, everybody. Pumi and I will be back next Thursday. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. You get a Lion of Judah like this.